Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Becky. I am the host of Becky Book of Media Book Club and Speak Network Talk Live Radio Show. I don't know how many of you tuned in last evening, but I was sharing one of 16 skeletons from my closet, a book that is filled with ghostly, ghastly deeds. And in that place, I shared Ghost Story by Henry Kane. It got down to violent force. He was one of three brothers that had gone on skiing trips along with their sister and the older brother, the more prominent brother, Adam, had supposedly accidentally fallen to his death. And shortly thereafter, appeared to the sister and told her that he was going to get them all one by one. He was going to pick them off. He was going to take them down. He was going to feel his wrath. And she had hired a detective, a Mr. Chambers, to investigate. And during his investigation, he had gone to see Simon Troy, who was the second oldest brother. And he was there at the bookstore that he worked in on 74th Street and Columbus Avenue. And that's where we start the story. Simon Troy worked in a drugstore at 74th Street and Columbus Avenue. So small, cluttered, and old-fashioned, and it did not have a soda fountain. It smelled of herbs and pharmaceuticals and gymnasiums. And there was dust on the shelves, and the dust in the air made you want to sneeze. Simon Troy worked in alone. Was a blonde, wispy little man with puppy, sad brown eyes, a beige leather complexion, and small yellow teeth. His smile, as he greeted me, was perfunctory. A drug clerk greeting the customer. I told him who I was and why I was there, and an expression of anxiety wizened his face as his smile receded. If you please, he said, let us go back where we can talk. The rear partitioned by thick plate glass from the front was a narrow area dominated by a door top wooden counter for the making of prescriptions. There were a couple of wire-backed rickety armless chairs, and he motioned me to one of them. Before I said, you are coming for us? Impatiently, he said, yes, yes, of course. I produced a cigarette and offered one to him and grabbed at it with thin, bony, tobacco-stained fingers. He lit my cigarette, lit it, and puffed at it rapidly, shallowly, and noisily. I talked and listened. I told him everything that Sylvia Troy had said. I told him of the finger-shaped pigment. When I was finished, he was finished with his cigarette, and he lit one of his own from the the one I donated, Mr. Chambers, is that I soon must realize how terribly worried I am about my sister. I nodded. I said nothing. She said, Mr. Chambers, I'm certain it was parenting. I nodded again. I said, can you tell me what happened up at Mr. Killington? At Mount Killington? You mean about the atom? Listen to me. He told me. We weren't even near him. He had gone over for a seat. He had gone over for a seat. At that precipice that we were quite far away, many yards from him. The three of us together, we must have had a seizure. I didn't tell. We heard the scream as it hit, howled, and then it was gone. The Vermont police examined the site after we requested it. They were gone to snow, and they could not make out any footprints on the edge. But from the point of the jagged crack below which they could reach, they covered bits of bone, bits of flesh, and bits of the sea boots he had been wearing. The body, of course, was never recovered. He put the tip of his right index finger between his teeth and bit upon his finger audibly. Mr. Troy, I said, do you have any idea as to why your sister has come up with this wild story of hers? I'm afraid there's only one explanation. I believe her to be in the throes of a severe nervous breakdown, but is there any basis for it? In past history, in reason, she wanted our reciprocal wills to be. She mentioned our reciprocal wills to you. Didn't she? Yes, I did. Well, Adam's estate and taxes was divided into appropriately $50,000 for each of us. My brother Joseph, the child of Hitler, was a rather conservative man, as am I. He put that money away and continued in the even tenure of our ways. But not so Sylvia. He quit her nightclub work, went up to Europe, went down here. He had squandered her inheritance into this. I think this did something to her. It stirred her that within a year she was back to where she had started. She was compelled to return to work for a living. And right then, right from the beginning, she began to act peculiarly. Then she began to prattle about a plot, our plot, to murder Adam. And now this terrible business about Adam's soul. And what about Joseph up there? The suicide. You can tell me? Precious river to tell. Joseph was a sweet, simple, meticulous man. He was quite a hypochondriac, although he had a rare doctor. About 6 months ago, he developed stomach pain, nausea, vomiting. He refused to go to a doctor, but I finally dragged him, x-rayed his throat, a mass in his stomach. The doctor believed it to be benign, but Joseph believes otherwise. He had arranged for an operation, but before the time for it arrived, he killed himself. Yes, I know. He flashed his wrist, I think. But what about this business of the weapon? He smiled. Yellow fame, sadly. The police are satisfied with the explanation. Joseph committed suicide in his bathroom, cut open his wrist, and bled to death. Knowing Joseph, I know exactly what he did. Once he made up his mind to do it, there was an open razor found nearby without a blade. He took the blade from the razor, cut his wrist, dropped the blade into the toilet bowl, flushed it down, and bled to death. There was a good deal of blood all over the bathroom, but no actual weapon. Joseph Watson took this. He should have it. He flushed the weapon away into the toilet bowl, but the leaky leak completely. If any thinking in the matter, I thought I was his brother. I knew him. I stood up saying, "Thank you, Mr. Tennessee." He said, "President, I was the last year." I said, "Mr. Chambers, go ahead. I believe you should be turning that key to my district. Why? Because you need a private investigator. You need a doctor." I'm inclined to agree. He smiled. He needed a relief, but I don't understand my equipment. "I've already made inquiries," he said, "and I've selected a position near nerve specialist, psychiatrist, whatever the devil is called on these days. By some pretext or other, I'm going to get her, you know, picking up a set. As for the fee, I agree. To belong with the doctor rather than with me. It's extremely considered, I think. I don't believe I should give it to her." I said, "No reason to trouble her anymore. I bring it to you. I don't have it with me, but I'll deliver it later on to your apartment. Please keep $50 with it, Mr. Chambers. You certainly earned that. Thank you. And I'll see you later. You know, Will, this car gave me your address on 4th Street, the apartment 3A, and Oak. Yes, actually, I'm a nightmare here. I work from 2 in the afternoon and I close at 10. Then I go home and sleep, shower, relax. So I'm not home until quite late. I'm somewhat of a nightmare myself," I said. "Suppose I come around midnight. Is that all right?" "Fine, fine. You've been very kind, Mr. Sanders. You shook hands with me, and I'm left. At 10 o'clock that evening, with $250 of whiskey in my pocket, I sat at the back table. Oh, that's it all. And watched her act. Got it all with them. And I'm pretentious, and the service was poor, the liquor was bad, and stole a serious tourist act. Came out in black powder, in black blouse. I should give them a taste of this lovely male and female. The range of voice was marvelous. From deep male baritone, the male alto, the female contralto, the mezzo soprano, the high, quivery soprano of old elderly women, but her imitations were limp. Her material wretched. Her timing was horrible, and her woeful little jokes were delivered without a spark of talent. I left in the middle of her performance. I had a late supper. I wandered in and out of some of the village club. I had a few drinks. I watched a few dancing girls. Then at midnight, I went to 149 West 4th Street. Simon Ford's dress. The self-service elevator took me up to the third floor, and there I pushed the button for 3A. I was soon after pushed it in and ran to the private knob. The door was open, and I entered. Simon Coyle was seated, staring straight ahead, his elbows resting on the edge of a table or two. On the table in front of him was a large cocktail glass empty, itself quite clearly at its base. He was staring at a vacant chair opposite, one that side of the table. On that side of the table, in front of the vacant chair, stood a similar cocktail glass, brimming full and untouched. I went quickly to Simon Coyle, examined him, and then went to the telephone and called the police to report his death. The man in charge was my friend, Detective the Lieutenant James Parker, of homicide. His experts quickly ascertained the cause of death as cyanide poison. Cherry in the drained cocktail glass was thoroughly imbued with amateur's fingertips were on the end of the glass. The other glass was free of poison. There were no fingerprints on its stem. Inspection revealed no vial or other container from poison in the apartment. After the body and evidence were removed, and Lieutenant Parker and I were alone, he said, "Well, what goes? What's the story on this? What are you doing here? Do you believe in ghosts, Lieutenant?" "It's the thing," he said. "Sometimes. Why? Are you going to tell me a ghost story?" "I'm not that," I said. I told him the entire story, and I told him what I was doing in Simon's court department. Wow. Let's go back to the little lady. He was in her dressing room. She maintained that she had been in her dressing room, but out on the floor, forming all night. The dressing room opened upon a corridor, which led to a back exit directly on the street. Parker questioned all of the employees in the place. None of his crew was busy right there. Then Troy took her to the station house and accompanied them. Then he questioned and questioned her for hours, but she stoutly maintained that she had not left her dressing room except to go out on the floor and do her act. Policemen came and went, and the questioning was frequently interrupted by whispers from conferences. At length, Parker threw her hands up. "Get out," he said to her. "Go home. And you better stay there. So we know where you are. We can reach you." "Yes, sir," she said. Meekly departed. We were silent. Parker lit a cigarette, and I lit a cigarette. I said, "Well, what do you think?" "I think that this little chick is putting on the fun game of the year. All fun games. And we don't have a thing on which to hold her." "How so, my friend?" I said. "You know about those reconcile reciprocal skills, the wheels, don't you?" "Yes." "The first one, Joseph, is still in probate. Now, the second one goes into probate. But these two brothers dead, that little game stands to come into upwards to $100,000. So we've got Joseph listed as a homicide. But since no weapon was found, it could have been a murder. Now this Simon could be suicide too, can't it? Except two vials, not no container." He waved her hand. "Spirit is going." "The ghost?" I said, "no, please. the game, he said. He killed the two of them and concocted this game story as the prettiest smoke screen ever. And you don't have one idea, you know, or one lot of truth against the, so we're going to keep at it. Maybe that I can acquire you. Getting smile, Willie. Go home, boy. You're tired. How about you? I said, not me. I stay right here and work. I got home at 4 o'clock, and as I opened my door, my phone was ringing. It ran. I ran to get to it and lift the receiver. It was Sylvia Foy. Mr. Chambers, she said, please, Mr. Chambers. The terror in her voice put needles in my, on my skin. What is it, I said? What's the matter? He called me. Who? Adam. When? Just now. Just now, he said. He was coming. He was coming for me. The voice drifted off. Miss Troy. I called. Miss Troy. Yes. The voice was speaking. Can you hear me? Yes. I want you to close all the windows and bolt them. I've already done that, he said, in that peculiar child-like sing song, and locked your doors and bolted. I've done that too. Now don't open your door to anyone except me. I ring and talk to you through the closed door, so you'll know who it is. You recognize my voice. Yes, Mr. Chambers. Yes, I will. Good. Now just stay put. I'll be there right away. I hung up and called Parker. I told him, this is it, I said. Whatever it is, bring plenty of men and plenty of artillery. We figure to shake loose the murderer. I'll meet you downstairs. You know that address. Of course, I hung up and ran. Aside from Parker, there were three detectives and three uniformed policemen, one of whom was carrying a carbine. As we entered the hallway, the detective and the two remaining policemen took their pistols from their holsters. At the door, Parker motioned to me, and I rang the bell. A deep, booming, muffling voice responded, yes, who is it? Peter Chambers. I want to talk to Miss Troy. She's not here, in the voice. That's a lie. I know she's in there. He doesn't want to talk to you. Who are you? None of your business, in the voice. Go away. Sorry, I'm not going, mister. The deep voice took on a raft of irritation. Look, I've got a gun in my hand. If you don't get away, I'm going to shoot right through the door. Parker pulled me aside and called to the door. Open up, police. I don't care who you say you are, boom the voice. I'm warning you for the last time. Either the people get away or I shoot. And I'm warning you, Paul Parker, either you open the door or we shoot. I'm going to count to three. Unless you open up, we're going to shoot our way in. One, no less. Two, deep booming. Jersey. Laughter. Three, no sound. Parker motioned to the policeman, tearing the carbine, and banged it. He ringed up. Parker raised his right hand, index finger pointed upward, open up, last call, no sound. Open up, last call, no sound. Parker pointed a finger at the policeman and nodded. A stream of bullets looked through the door. There was a piercing scream a thud and silence. Parker made a sign. The two other detectives brought him in. They knew what to do. They hurled themselves at the door, shoulder to shoulder. In unison, time and again, the door creaked, gave, and then burst from its fastening. Elliot Poy lay on the floor, dead of a bullet from the carbine. There was no one else in the apartment. The door had been locked and bolted. The windows were closed and bolted from the inside. Inspection was quick, expert, and unequivocal. But from the force of Sylvia Toy, and now ourselves, there was no one else in the apartment. Detective Lieutenant Louis Parker came to me, his eyes belligerent, but bewildered, his face angrily glistening beneath a veil of perspiration. His men, tall, big arms, strong muscles, powerful, gathered like silent children in a group about him. "What the hell?" said the detective lieutenant. The words issued through a certain hoarse whisper. "What do you think, Pete?" I had to swallow. Before I could speak. But I clung to my premise. I do not believe in ghosts, I said. Perhaps I do not believe in ghosts because I refuse to believe in ghosts. And my mind rejects the possibility and seeks other explanations. In the Troy affair, such explanation for me involved death, wish, hallucinations, guilt complex, retribution, self-punishment, and dual personality. There are those who disagree with my conclusion. You may be one of them. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of the ghost story. I must say that story leaves a lot to imagination. But at the end of the story, it alludes to the fact that Sylvia Troy not only was suffering from delusions, but she was guilt-ridden. She was hallucinating. She was serving her retribution and punishment through dual personality. She was not only herself, but she was her dead brother. And she, as her dead brother, was wreaking havoc on her other brothers because she wanted to have all the money. But if that were the case, why did she kill herself? If she killed her brothers to get all the money, then it doesn't make sense to kill herself because she already had the money and basically she had gotten away with it. So if she truly was doing that to herself, not to her brothers, it doesn't make sense that she did that to herself. That just doesn't make sense. Well, I will leave you to that conclusion for yourself. But this is part of 16 Skeletons from the Closet, from my closet, and this is a Alfred Hitchcock bestseller. Now, it goes on to talk in the intro that perhaps a rolling pin, a jungle knife brought back from the Amazon country years ago by the original owner who had traveled with Theodore Roosevelt, a dose of poison in the soup. stand a strong support across the top of the staircase. I can promise you a shutter in good time in the pages to come. This is an intro signed in the handwriting of Alfred Hitchcock. I can still remember. Good evening. This is Alfred Hitchcock. Tonight we will be talking about a ghost story by Henry King. He was a ghastly looking fellow, and his sheer appearance added to the spook of the story. That being said, this book is covered by a skeleton, a frame, the whole body a skeleton, and the head of Alfred Hitchcock. And I will be sharing more of these stories as we go through. Remember, God has a plan for our lives. God has a great plan for our lives. God has a plan. Do not despair. No matter your care, do not despair. Because God has a plan. I thank you for listening to the book club. Tonight, I am wiped out. And so, I'm going to end a wee bit early. A wee bit earlier than usual, I'm going to end. But I would like to stay in my departing that very soon there will be people sharing the platform with me. And I have so much work to do, I tell you. I don't know what to do. But I'm looking forward to setting up shows for great guests throughout the rest of the year. Great books by potential great guests. Alrighty, I am glad to bring you this show, and I must end short tonight because I am wiped out, plain and simple wiped out. So, I will see you and talk with you next week. Same time, same station, Monday through Friday. Lots of stuff going on next week. Pray for me. That God will strengthen me and take me through. Good night, all.